Good afternoon and welcome. You're listening to The Word from the Trenches on Patriot Broadcast from the Trenches, 89.5 Micro FM, Chiloquin, the state of Jefferson. Simulcast on IndianaFreedomTalkRadio.com, the Grow Your Own Channel, 107.5 FM, Greenville, South Carolina, the Jalapeno Channel, 87.9 FM, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and numerous other micro broadcasts and webcasts across our great nation. Our website is FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com. We open the broadcast with Trenches by Pop Evil. It is, well, it's Muck and Fun. No, it isn't. It's Muck and Tuesday. It's Turncoat Tuesday. Oh, man, Memorial Day kind of threw me off a little bit there. It is Tuesday. It's the 30th day of May, 2017. It's 12:04 Pacific time. I'm your host, Henry Shively. This is a live call-in program, and listeners are encouraged to join in the conversation. If you'd like to call in, the number is 641-715-3610. A nice lady will come on the line and ask you for the conference room you want, and that would be 220029 and then the pound sign. Again, that's 641-715-3610 and then enter 220029 and hit that pound sign. Of course, you have to punch in star six to unmute if you want to come up on the air and talk with me today. It is currently 71 degrees here, 4,200 feet in the high Cascades of northern Jefferson, and we're looking for a high of 72 degrees today for the Klamath Basin. Just it has cooled down a little bit, and it's milder, and it's really, really nice. I haven't checked for chemtrails, but I'm sure they'll be there. Anyways, let's see what we're up to today. Oh, that's right, the first article of our People's Bill of Rights. And we're going to get into that as soon as we return from these messages from our most outstanding sponsors. You're listening to The Word from the Trenches on PBFTT.
Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disaster situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just the conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Bringing you the word from the trenches, please give a big round of applause for Henry Shively.
All righty then, per request of Misty, we're going to go over the Bill of Rights this week and a little bit of next week, and try to lay it out in a forum that could be understood by the children out there that our people are trying to teach. And what I intend to do here is I'll read the first article to the Bill of Rights, and after that the second and then the third. But I've broken it down, the first article, into the individual clauses. And we'll hit each clause, and when I'm finished hitting that clause, if somebody has a question, that would be the time to chime in. We're going to start again with the first article for the People's Bill of Rights. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. We'll start with Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. Well, it's, you know, it's pretty well stated there. They shall make no law. There shall be no church state. But we'll look at the reasoning behind this. Why did our founders who wrote the Bill of Rights include the first article. In the end, you will see that they all go together and they make up the natural rights of a free person upon this planet. And they also make up the maximums in the law and the procedures in the common law to exercise every right, whether perceived or not perceived, whether known or unknown. It can be litigated. We're going to look at the church. Or what? Why did our people come here? Why did the first Americans, well, they weren't the first. There were people here. Why did the first colonists come here? They mostly came as indentured servants. They were under contract. They were, for all intents and purposes, they were slaves. There was a wild land out here rich with resource that the crown heads of Europe, they were fighting. They were already fighting over it before it was ever settled, really. The first Americans sent here from Europe were, you know, they were Irish, German, a lot of Germans. I think the most of the population come the time of the revolution, or what they're calling the Revolutionary War, coming the time of the uprising, they were mostly German. And there are a lot of Scot and a lot of Irish, which I have all three of those and a little Injun blood. The Church of England is the state Church of England. The Archbishop of Canterbury is the most senior cleric. Although the monarch is the supreme governor, that's saying that the Queen of England is the supreme governor, and you know they have a parliament over there which is supposed to represent the people in a system of democracy, but we know that when there was an issue with changing the Prime Minister of Canada, the Queen, she showed up and she laid the law down. I mean, it's all put out there for show. It's still a monarchy, just like it was back when we broke away from it. And it becomes more apparent that this is really what is being looked for today, is a return to the monarchs of old. And again, here you have the Church of England. The Church of England is also the mother church of the International Anglican Communion. It dates its establishment as a national church to the 6th century Georgian mission to Kent by the Augustine of Canterbury. The English church renounced papal authority when Henry VIII failed to secure an annulment of his marriage to Catherine of Aragon in the 1530s. The English Reformation accelerated under Edward VI's regents before a brief restoration of papal authority under Queen Mary I and King Philip. The Act of Supremacy, 1558, renewed the breach, and the Elizabethan settlement chartered a course whereby the English Church was to be both Catholic and Reformed. So in the beginning, it was Catholicism, rule under the Pope. And see, the Pope was the direct connect with God, and so he was the one that got to make kings. And man, a lot of wealth was accumulated there in the Vatican now, wasn't it? It's all bullshit, to be as mild as I can. I'm trying to be good today. It's all bullshit. What it comes down to is you had a organization that became the Catholic Church, who sold the people on the idea that God was communicating straight through them, and then ordained the aristocracy, the elite. Everybody else was beneath them. You were not on a par with them. You lived via their will. And this is what we found when the time came when the first settlements in Jamestown and Plymouth Rock, we've all heard of, but when the first Americans from Europe came, when the first Europeans came to America, let's get it right, because there were already Americans here. When the first Europeans came to America, they were, like we said earlier, endangered. And they were sometimes criminals, just like Australia, you know, people would, rather than being jailed or hanged, would opt to go to the colonies and be put into indentureship, and then the money was sent back to the crown, so they got a price for a slave, is pretty much what it come down to. And these were the first Americans to arrive. As the British Empire expanded, British colonists and colonial administration took the established church doctrines and practices together with ordained ministry and formed overseas branches of the Church of England. So the church, when you know, the story you'll get in school is that, you know, they came here fleeing the religious oppression, but the oppression came with them. As soon as the land was settled to the point that it was safe for a gentleman to get here, the gentleman did come, and so came the bishops and archbishops of the Church of England, the Catholic Church, and started, I mean, they got away with nothing. This is why when we look at our first article, we see that, you know, after, this is after the settlement, I mean, after the King had of England had surrendered his sword to George Washington, and the people, you know, the Constitution had been written empowering a government. It was a confederation of governments during the war that was put together to fight that war, and so and to hijack a popular uprising and form a government and form a, in the middle of an uprising, which you just can't do. There wasn't no vote, and they can't call it a democracy or the will of the people or anything. It was the will of the aristocrats. It was their wealth that determined that, oh, well, they're going to be in positions of power, and when the sword surrendered, they're going to be writing a constitution giving them power from now on. And giving them control over the wealth of this nation to disperse through their Masonic lodges and their churches, and for them to be the first to disperse it, you know, they have it for nothing. And the next guy, he's going to get it for next to nothing because he's at a degree in the lodge, or else he's a elder in the church, and then he gets to sell it to somebody else. And it comes down to the point that the people who actually captured this country from the king are paying to have the properties that they won in war to an aristocratic elite who said, I mean, there were a few, like George Washington did go out and he put himself to the hazard, but it was only so that they could take control of the situation and in the end control of the wealth. And I mean, it comes down to it today, going out into the woods to get a mushroom, and you have to, you know, you have to have a permit. You have to buy that mushroom from, it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to, it's going through the hands of an aristocracy that was never supposed to exist. At any rate, they seen back then people like Patrick Henry and Nathan Hale. I mean, there were a lot of patriots who weren't a part of the aristocratic scene back then. Payne, who graces the front of From the Trenches. I mean, he had been over into France and the United States, you know, writing the Rights of Man, which a lot of what comes out of our Bill of Rights came from the Rights of Man. The people that talk about the Magna Carta, the Magna Carta had nothing to do with it. The Magna Carta was a grant of nobility to give the nobles an equal par with the king in right, in court, as free men. Because if there's anybody over you, if there's anybody's will that trumps your own will, you're not free. You are not sovereign of your nation. So the first they put up here, because they were oppressed in the colonies by the church, by the dirty church, in cohorts with the Masonic Lodge. They had the wealth. They controlled the wealth. They were the banks. They were the people who said who got what. And, of course, you know, they did it through the king's charter. The king actually had to sign the charters, like for people like George Washington to get big tracts of land, William Penn, big tracts of land. But it was through the king's charter. But they were the king's men on this continent, and they were, in reality, the individuals that the people rose up against. And that's why I believe that the first thing that they put in that Bill of Rights is we got to make sure that these same people, because they've already assumed that they are the new aristocracy, they've already written a constitution that they're fixing to force upon all of us, because it was never ratified by the people. The representatives, which were, they can say the representatives of the states ratified the Constitution, but that does not mean they represented the people, because there had never been an elected government. It was formed in the middle of an uprising. And who were these representatives? Well, they were the same elite. They were the church elders. They were the Masonic high ups in the Masonic Lodge. And so they saw the same people getting ready to, well, just take right back over, only just dismissing the king and all the wealth going to them, like lords of their own on this land. So the first thing they put in, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of a religion. It was to break the control of the aristocracy. The king's charter had ruled the colonies since their inception, since the people had come here as indentured, but the people had to go into the wilderness and hack their life out of it, apart from any authority. Any authority when they went into, see, the king, that these people who wanted to control them didn't have the moxie, they didn't have the courage to go into the unsettled lands and settled them. And so the people that went out there, they were on their own. I mean, they had to defend themselves against the native population who weren't real excited about people coming into their hunting grounds and people claiming to own property just because, well, a king across the ocean said they do. And the king, you know, he stuck a flag in a beach and the whole thing belonged to him as far as he could reach. We saw the French Indian Wars. We've seen the wars with Spain because Spain had been, you know, had in Mexico. Into even what parts of the United States now, Arizona, New Mexico, California, Florida, for sure. And we saw that during the War of 1812 when Colonel Jackson, Andrew Jackson, became president, when he the march down south to expel the British, where they had done trading with the Spanish and decided that they were going to swap contracts this way and that way and try to hold some authority over the land that way. But the bottom line is they were expelled. And then the people were looking at these same aristocrats. So the first thing they did is said, there's not going to be any church state anymore. There's not going to be any papal across the ocean influencing our lives, telling us how to live, taking our property and taxes. And so the Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof is added. With this, what this did, this clause put the churches, the true churches, the churches that the people might choose to put together. Or prohibiting the free exercise thereof what we're talking about here is free thought. The right to think or believe whatever you choose to believe. No outside influence. There is no law saying that you have to believe in this God, that God, or the other God. There's no law saying you have to believe anything. They cannot. Well, they can. They have. But it is a prohibition on any kind of, well, thought control, because that's really what it comes down to. Anyways, the churches were to be on a par with the individual free sovereign. As a free sovereign... Pardon? Yes, sir.
I'm confused about your objection to the Magna Carta. I mean, that made everybody be nobles, and then also that's where we get our habeas corpus. And none of the Bill of Rights has habeas corpus, I don't think.
Well, actually, it does. We're almost down to that part. When you get down to petition for grievances, I mean that is when you start talking about writs. But at the Magna Carta, no. What the Magna Carta did is it put the nobles, it wasn't for common people over there in England. If you were a serf, you were a serf upon the land, and the landowner controlled your life. He could cut your food off. When the Magna Carta was written, it was written for the king's nobles across the land, so that they could be considered freemen on a par with the king in as far as right to land, to own property is really what it came down to. Does that answer?
Well, I mean, it protected widows, and it gave back the national forest to everybody. And I mean, I'm confused.
I'm talking about freeman rights. I'm talking about rights to go into court. Now, if one of these people had a problem, let's say on one of the national forests over there, they still had to go to the noble. The noble was the sovereign who had, I mean, it made sovereigns out of the nobles. Like the king before that, the king was the only sovereign. He could go and take a whole nobility. A fiefdom. But if the people had a complaint, they had to take it to the Lord. They had to plead their case before a Lord. There was no court that was open to everybody like we have here in the United States with the common law.
Well, chapter 17 is the one that's made all the court of common pleas be local and accessible.
Local, yeah, exactly. Local. Who did you plead to, though?
Well, it had to be in a fixed location. I mean,
yeah, it was the castle where the Lord was. That's where you took your pleas.
Yeah, well, I ain't saying it ain't perfect.
It ain't perfect, and it ain't got nothing to do with our common law, man. I've heard this argument before, and it really has nothing to do with our common law. I mean, ours was cut and made for us. Sorry?
I'm not arguing. I'm confused. I'm trying to understand your position.
Well, if you let me run all the way through this article, when we get down to the petition, the petitioning part, you'll understand what I'm talking about. But we were at the prohibiting the free exercise thereof. like I said, this was came down to the thought control. The state would never have any right to tell you what to think. Or, you know, to, and of course the church is, like I said, that's where I was at. We're on a par with a individual. Is to, you know, they were free as an individual. They were within the common law. They were not within the administrative part of the government where the government had any control over them. Just like the people, they were set apart. And it, the people were protected from the church, in any excess because they were on a par with the church in the common law too, and they still had the due process of the law. If the church tried to inflict anything on them, outside of the church's authority on its own property, well, then that would be taken to the common law courts and it would be rectified. Or abridging the freedom of speech, you know, that of course this comes down to, you know, there's countries like China right now where you can't speak out against the government. And right now in this country, they're trying to, you know, call you a terrorist. If you speak out against the government, even if you're speaking for the Bill of Rights, well, that's anti-government speech. And there, you know, they talk about not the hate speech. There is no right in these Bill of Rights not to be offended by anybody. You have to, if you have a cause in law, within the common law, you will have a damage, either a physical damage or monetary damage that you can show, or you have no bitch about it. You can't say anything about it. I mean, what people, other people think, what other people want to say, if you don't want to endure it, walk away. If it's something that somebody comes up and says in your face, now there is the glitch, which is the fighting words doctrine. If somebody comes up and insults you to your face and you whip their ass, well, it's between you and the jury. The jury will decide whether, I mean, you just say, man, he said that to me. And they'll look at it through your eyes and say, well, man, you know, he just triggered him. I mean, that was an insult that no man has to take. And once upon a time in this country, dueling was legal. And I think that was one of the things they had to accomplish to get the aristocracy into place. And it was really kind of an upper crust thing, the dueling thing. Most people who in the real world of the common man, when they got mad, they did shoot each other, but it wasn't out there 10 paces, turn around and shoot. But the dueling, it kind of kept things honest because it didn't matter how much money you had. If you walked up and you smucked somebody across the face with your glove, man, you said, I'll see you in the morning, buddy, or else eat crow. Else you're a coward. Else you're the scum that I say you are. And you could, I mean, that was instant justice against a tyranny that was going unchecked by the Bill of Rights because, you would get situations where, well, people get together and they group up and they try to compound their authority to give them authority over another person, which can't exist under the Constitution. But as far as personal insult, you know, like harassing somebody, you know, insulting somebody's wife or what might have you because you're mad at the man and you just don't. I mean, it comes down to what we're looking at today with everybody being, well, pussified is the easiest way I can put it. You didn't have to be pussified, and it wasn't that long ago in this country till if somebody, you know, pushed you past your limits and you got in a fist fight and you beat them down, if you could show that you were just, I mean, the dude pushed me and the rest of the jury, you have 12 people looking at your situation and weighing it against their own rights and their own feelings as far as, you know, what justifies somebody just whopping somebody in the nose. And so you had justice there. But abridging the freedom of speech is tantamount to, you know, can you be free? And it comes down to when you come into the law, too, when you're going to exercise your rights through the common law. Of course, you have to have the freedom to speak. You see all these cases like the thing with the Bundys in Las Vegas right now, where the judge says this can't be allowed, that can't be allowed. That was never a part of the common law. It is not today. The judge does not decide what is evidence. The jury decides what is evidence. And I mean, if somebody gets up on the stand and they start speculating, you can look it over to the jury and say, he's speculating. Jury can go, yep, he's speculating. Can't weigh that as a fact because what we're here to decide is fact. But the judge doesn't get to go up there and look at, you know, have everybody write out a deposition and start, just like the government, blacking things out. This can't be said in court. That can't be said because then you're removing the 12 juries and replacing them with one. All that judge is ever supposed to be there for is to make sure that the processes are followed and nobody's rights are violated. It doesn't matter how much information wants to come in. It's to the jury to decide whether it's relevant, irrelevant, fact, or not fact. And so that's the freedom of speech, again, is getting up on the soapbox. And again, we come down to this no right to be offended. If you want to get up on the soapbox and, shout the rudest things, this is where the blue laws came in. You know, like cursing and what might have you. There was actually times in this country where you could get, you know, thrown in jail for cursing in public. And you can't have that in a free society, because then it goes down to that inalienable right thing. If it's unalienable, there's no exception. We talked about the freedom of speech and the yelling fire in a theater. Well, they've passed laws because that's a real good idea. Everybody agreed that's a real good idea, that if you can't yell fire in a theater, but yeah, you can. You are responsible for what occurs after you yell fire, and if there ain't no fire and somebody gets trampled, man, you're going to pay for that. But they cannot arbitrarily say that, you know, they can't remove a right on a could be. They can prosecute you on what happened, but they cannot say this could happen, therefore you can't. The government never had no such power, and it's outlined in the fourth, and it's in the ninth article, absolutely, that the government can't just arbitrarily make conditions on your rights. They've never had any power over your rights, and they cannot even make a law saying you cannot yell fire. If you yell fire and somebody gets hurt, then people can come after you. They can take everything you got. But they cannot say you can't, they can't, if you, the reason being, if you can say you can't yell fire, then that you've opened the door. And we've talked about this many times. You open the door to infringement, you've made an exception. There is no exception to the absolute. And the Bill of Rights is absolute law, and it has to be to function. When you make that first exception, you've already opened the door for the second one, and pretty soon you end up where we are today. Or of the press, and this is, as far as in the day, you might, if you had the gumption and you could get a press, you could put together a letter or just like Payne did, common sense. It was a free thing that each individual could do. It wasn't institutionalized. It wasn't controlled by the government. It isn't supposed to be, but we've seen that abridged because there was an exception made. When that first exception is made, then the next exception's right behind it. Pretty soon you've got CNN, Fox. You have, what the hell would you call it? You have Monopoly at the top. And then you have, once they've got all the wealth at the top, then they can use that wealth to suppress at the bottom. And this is where it's being, the right of the press is the right of the people to be the press. Any one of us can be the press. And we can set up a printing press. We need no permit from the government. And you see, this is what they've tried. This is how they've tried to destroy that clause in the first article. Is by, pretty soon you have to be in line with the FCC. If you want a radio station, you got to let them have a thing on your transmitter that they can shut it down. See, this is just another infringement with zero authority prohibited by the ninth article, which says they can create no power in that constitution that abridges any of these rights, the right of the people to peaceably assemble. Again, I mean, this could be anything from a picnic to a barbecue, and you're seeing it today where they're, people want to get together, a family, maybe they got 40, 50 people and their family coming, and oh, you need to go get a permit for that. It's this permission from the government thing is what they're talking about. We need no permission. We're going to take our break, and we'll just pick it up from there, because we're going to each day we're going to try to hit one. Some days we might come up short, some days we might come up long, but we're going to get right back into this as soon as we return from this bottom of the hour break. We'll be back in about 8 minutes. You're listening to The Word from the Trenches on PBFTT.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disaster situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just the conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Divergent Flavor Labs introduces our all-original e-juice flavor line made from pure 100% kosher USP food-grade ingredients. Whether it's our flavored tobaccos like Calypso or our amazing bakery flavors like Creme de Liumptious, Divergent Flavor Labs' handmade all-original flavor line will never disappoint. Available exclusively through VaporRebellion.com.
As Mrs. and Mr. America frit, they huddle around their TV set, they worry and they sweat. They're thinking I'm the enemy, the one they need to get, because their mind controllers tell them I'm a major threat. The talking heads, the daily press, they cultivate stupidity and harvest ignorance. They point a crooked finger and they're all unanimous by calling me extremist, cause I'm down on Zionists. So now I want to sing a new song. I want to be an extremist. I want to join a militia and wear camouflage. I want to be an extremist and run around and sing a rabble-rousing rebel song and sympathize with the skiddies who realize it was the did the Germans wrong. I want to be an extremist. I want to get the job done. Now what's so bad about being extreme? If I'm extremely innocent, if I'm extremely keen, if I'm extremely paranoid, it's cause of what I've seen. It's written in between the lines of every magazine. The FBI, the CIA are working for the KGB and getting in my way, cause they don't like my politics, they dog me every day. I'm getting tired of telling them the problem is oy vey. The enemy is communism. I want to be an extremist. I want to join a militia and wear camouflage. I want to be an extremist and run around and sing a rabble-rousing rebel song and sympathize with the skinnies who realize it was the Germans wrong. I want to be an extremist.
I just want to get the job done.
Wants to know the truth, but all he gets is phony news. His state of mind is captured by the mouth's opposing views. His only guarantee is that he shouldn't be amused. Some may win, but most will lose. Their lives are only figments of the thoughts they cannot choose. And I doubt you'll ever see me on the 6 o'clock news, exposing lying, thieving, cheating communists. Who made me sing you this song? I want to be an extremist. I want to join a militia and wear camouflage. I want to be an extremist and run around and sing a rabble-rousing rebel song and sympathize with the skinnies who realize it was the Jews who did the Germans wrong. I want to be an extremist. I want to get the job done. I want to be an extremist and I just want to have fun. Cha-cha-cha.
You're listening to The Word from the Trenches on Patriot Podcast from the Trenches, 89.5 Micro FM, Chiloquin, the state of Jefferson. The Word from the Trenches is a listener-sponsored broadcast. If you'd like to help keep this programming on the air, go to FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com and hit that donate button. Or you can mail donations to Henry Shively at Post Office Box 964, Chiloquin, Oregon 97624. Your contributions are appreciated. I'm your host, Henry Shively. It is 12:38 Pacific Time. And that was Carl Kling with I Want to Be an Extremist. And right back into this, we were at freedom of the press. Now, the best way to say this is it's just like Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of a religion. We determined that the church was going to be a free entity apart from the government, and so was the press. Any one of us could be a press. Any one of us could form a church. But when you have the government granting, this is what getting into what Charlie was talking about. This is not something granted by a government. This is something declared by a people that we're going to be self-governing. And the Magna Carta, it was a compromise by a king to let the people come in, you know, that they would have some kind of compulsory process and a right to have property. But when you did go to plead, you pled to the king. I mean, you were still pleading to the king, and you had a court. It was a court of lords. And, I mean, even to the time when the people came over here to escape the oppression of the church. I mean, you might have a church law that you broke, and I tell you what, that didn't have nothing to do with the common law, because the Bible is, it's not sworn fact. It's not sworn testimony, and it's not direct testimony. Go ahead. I thought I heard somebody.
Hey, Henry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I'm clearing my throat.
Oh.
Thank you for doing this segment, by the way. But I wanted to address as far as the freedom of speech, where you had stated numerous times about you can't go into the, an example, I go into the town square, I'm preaching communism.
Mm-hmm.
So is that not at the same time a voice of freedom of speech, or where does that line get drawn then?
It gets drawn with in the Constitution. We're guaranteed a Republican form of government. We are a republic based on the free rights of individuals. And if you try to bring in an alternate form of government, then you go to the point of insurrection, where you're trying to topple the form of government. And so that becomes a crime against not only the state, but the people. The people who established how our government's going to be. If you don't like, you know, how we live here, you can go somewhere else, but our laws are our laws. And if you come in here advocating for a collectivism, which is the exact opposite of a republic with an emphasis on the rights of an individual, you're talking overthrow. Then you start entering into the realms of usurping the government, usurping the people's government. It would be if things were ran under the Constitution. Insurgency. You know, you're trying to usurp the government. You're trying, and it is the people's government if it's ran under the Constitution like it's supposed to be, and that is a crime. And any one of us, if somebody was up there preaching communism, I could charge them. I could charge them in the common law and bring them into a common law court. And what's my damage? You're trying to remove my freedom. You're trying to remove my individual freedom and replace it with collectivism, which is a usurpation. I mean, you're trying to usurp my government. You're trying to overthrow it and change it. And that we do not have to allow.
Right. I understand.
Okay, we were the right of the people to peaceably assemble.
That's when you request a duel.
Yeah, there you go. That worked for me just fine. You know, we were talking about, you know, the right of the people to assemble, and that would include us assembling outside of any government control as militia to get together to right a wrong. I mean, if the government, we'll get to the petition part next, but if we petition the government, and see, that was another thing that was kind of confusing to people. I mean, you're petitioning the government, but this is, you know, we're supposed to have two separate bodies of law here, the people separated from the government, living as free people, self-governing, but then you're talking about petitioning the government. Well, it comes down to procedure, because if the government if they legislate a law that violates a right, okay, then an agent is going to try and enforce that law. When that agent goes to enforce that law, now you have the right to drag him into a common law court for your redress in the common law for a wrong done you or a damage to property, whatever it comes down to. But you have to still have to follow procedure. And how can you, you know, it's like when these worlds come too close together, that's how they got the first foot in the door for the infringement. But the petition to the government is when you write your writs. I mean, if the government is, I don't care what office of the government it would be, if a government agent is coming under the authority, supposed authority of the government to violate a right, then you send to the head of that agency a writ of mandamus, an order to obey the law. You cite the law. The ninth article would be the one I'd be citing every day. The ninth article, you do not have the authority to do this. And why do you have to petition the government for a redress of grievance? Well, this is. Go ahead.
And the Bill of Rights, I mean, communism can't exist with the Bill of Rights. It's the exact opposite.
Exactly. Exactly. You're not trying to, what you're trying to do is overthrow the people's government. If you come in preaching communism, fascism, any kind of ism that would violate the ninth article to give you power a government power outside of the Bill of, what's granted and in violation of the Bill of Rights. But you write your grievance to your government and you tell them, man, this right is being violated. This needs to stop and I want to be compensated for the wrong that has been done to me, and I order this court to order it. You go into one of their, I think these are, in my opinion, these were meant for the government courts from the people. That's how the people took their authority to the government. And then, if that agent wants to go ahead and they want to try and enforce that law, then you bring it to a court higher than the government, which is the people's courts, the superior court, the justice court. And you bring that person in as an individual, and this is when we get to the part about obeying unlawful orders. Now, if you've served writ showing that this is in violation of a right, and then that government agent, you know, he's got a copy of the writ. You show him a copy of the writ you sent. You're in violation. As a government agent, you cannot do this. If you act past this, I'm going at you as an individual because you're working under color of law, and you're depriving me of a right. And so I'm going to take you into the common law court away, not as a government agent. I'm bringing you as Joe Blow. You're coming in. I've filled out the paperwork. I'm bringing you. I've given the fourth article process. I've the two affidavits, and I'm bringing you into court for what you did as Joe Blow. And you can say, well, the government, I'm a government agent, and the government says, I don't care about that. It doesn't matter. The government's beneath the people. The common law is the superior jurisdiction in this country. Now, did you do XYZ? Well, yeah, I did, but I did as a government. I don't care if you did it as a government agent. Government can have no such power. It's right there in that writ you're holding. Now, I look over at the jury and I say, here you go. This is what he did. He's claiming an authority over us to do this. And I want this redress. I'm going to take everything he's got to teach him a lesson. We'll call it punitive damages. So that they don't try this again. And all it takes is those 12 people to affirm it. And that is the law of this land. Absolutely. Because the jury was how we, the people, were to determine what was our law and what was not as the supreme authority in this country. And so, again, you know, to petition the government, it is. Yeah, you would petition them if they, you know, because they're going to be legislating. You gave them that authority to legislate laws. But when you, like when that writ goes to them, now you wondered what the Supreme Court and all this, well, the Supreme Court that seems to think they have authority to change our law, the superior law, that they can't even come into. Now, when that writ goes to them, that government agent, he reads it, he sends it upstairs to the next fella, he reads it. And ultimately, if they're going to make a decision on this, they go for an opinion to their Supreme Court. This goes right up the channel. Supreme Court reads it. And they're looking at a ninth article violation. Then the Supreme Court advises them not to do it. If you do it, you have no defenses. This is what that Supreme Court was supposed to be for. You do that, and this guy can take you into the common law and take everything you got. You have no authority as a government agent to do this. And that's how the grievance process worked. And, you know, we were talking about the freedom to assemble, and we have an article to go along with that today. Portland mayor asked feds to bar free speech and anti-Shahira rallies after stabbings. This is from Washington Post. The mayor of Portland, Oregon, is calling on federal authorities to cancel a pair of upcoming rallies organized by conservative groups, saying the city was still in shock after two men were fatally stabbed on a commuter train Friday while fending off a man shouting anti-Muslim Muslim slurs. Mayor Ted Wheeler asked the federal government to revoke a permit authorizing a June 4th Trump free speech rally. Now, what's wrong with that statement, people, after what we just went through? The government does not give us permission to exercise a right. Otherwise, it's not a right. It's a privilege granted by government. But see, I'll tell you how this thing works, okay? Portland Showdown, free speech rally in Portland downtown. He also called on the government to block a march against Sharia that is scheduled for June 10th, but has not received permits. The federal government controls permitting for the plazas where both rallies are set to take place. What's this government authority that was supposed to stay inside that 10-mile little square over there called Washington, D.C., doing in Portland, in the middle of Portland? They have control over a plaza. It's a federal plaza in the middle of Portland? Well, this is, again, a violation of the Ninth Article. They can't bring their federal authority out there, and they cannot trump these people's rights with some notion of a federal authority. The corrective remedy would be the writ, telling them they have no authority. They've exceeded their authority in violation of the Ninth Article, and they need to cease and desist. But then, like I said, it would be kicked clear up to the Supreme Court. So if they're supposed to be these legal scholars, they can read the Bill of Rights and see that in the first article that the right of the people to assembly is absolutely, you know, it's an absolute right. It can't be touched. Any notion to the contrary would be a violation of the Ninth Article. And they would advise those lower downs that they cannot do this. You have no authority. You would be acting under color of law, and you'd open yourself up to being drug into a common law court and having everything you have taken from you by that person. One person. But then, you know, Portland has, let's see, where were we here? The city of Portland will not issue any of its own permits allowing organizations. See, all of these 501c3s, these nonprofit organizations that are actually government agents. And see, this is where you get away from your individual rights by this collectivism, this communism. These organizations, I mean, F an organization. I say I'm going to show up in Portland. I can get freedom of the press. I can use my freedom of the press, and I can put out a letter saying that I'm going to be in Portland, and I'm going to be raising some hell about Sharia law and whatever else these people are raising hell about, the Muslims. I mean, I don't care what it is. I'm going to be there. Anybody that wants to come, show up. We're going to be in this plaza right here, exercising our first article of freedom of speech and freedom of assembly without condition or permission from any government. Because the government has no authority to grant us permission to exercise a right. They are beneath us. They do not grant us. We grant them. And then everybody shows up, and we do as we please. And anybody tries to stop us, then they are going to be acting under color of law, because they'd be in violation of the Ninth Article. They have no authority to cancel or to infringe on a right any whatsoever. And that's why it was made absolute. And again, you know, somewhere down the line there, you'd have to look back to see when the first instance was, but we've seen it grow from a seed, where that first seed was, where some notion that you had to have some kind of permission to exercise that right. It's like our second article right. You know, you're going down and you're going to do a background check, and the government's going to decide whether you can have a gun or not. No, by God, it ain't. Otherwise, that right is not absolute. It's arbitrary. It's arbitrary to the discretion of a government. This is what we have to realize, is that they have no authority over us. They never have had any authority. All we're looking at is tyranny being inflicted under color of law. And color of law means there is no law. It's the illusion that they're operating under the law. The writings, the Ninth Article says it. I mean, if you can read, it says what it says. And it says no such authority can exist. Therefore, it has to be color of law. You have no authority to grant me any kind of permission to exercise any right. Otherwise, it's not a right. It is a privilege granted by the government, which gets back to the Magna Carta, which was granted by the aristocracy, by the monarchy over there. And it was conditional to their whims. They could change it at will. And even if you came in and you were arrested for murdering somebody, if you had the right connections, oh, we're going to show mercy today. It wasn't 12 of your peers getting together to decide what the outcome of this trial was going to be, what the punishment was going to be, what the redress was going to be. It was an aristocracy, and that's what's gone on in this country from its inception. This aristocracy never let go. There has always been, there was a time in this country where it was clearly understood, the time of Al Capone. Well, if you had enough money, you could buy yourself out of murder. I mean, how many people did Al Capone kill? And then finally, through insertion of the FBI, an illegal agency, and arming that illegal agency, which was the reason they let Al Capone go so far. Otherwise, the people would, if the common law would have been in place, the people could have just shut him down. The people could have just walked in and shot him or hung him. You put it to a situation of force majeure. That is a term in law that goes, another one of those with that fighting words document. Force majeure. When the law breaks down, I have a right to defend my life and my property. No, I don't have to go through the courts. If the courts are corrupt, if this gangster has bought all the people in the courts, but the thing is, when you're talking money and power, they will never be the majority of the people. It'll be a small minority controlling everything. Go ahead.
Isn't that pretty much where we're at now?
Oh, absolutely, brother. Absolutely. The law has broken down. There is no protection from the law. I mean, it's the law of the jungle. I have the right to preserve my life. I mean, I have the right to it's like, you know, they can say, how should we put this? That, I mean, if you had to, you know, like tear somebody's fence down because you were dying of thirst and there was water on the other side, you committed no crime. You have a right to live. Your right to live supersedes the right of that person to fence his water off. I mean, if you put yourself in that situation, maybe you could be held to have to pay for that water. But it's force majeure is what it comes down to. The law has broken down. There is no law. I have the right to live. And I have the right to, my property right behind me, I got the right to shoot your ass to protect it. If there is no law in place to protect it. If the system has been removed that allows me to protect my rights, just like at Lexington and Concord. The people actually were supposed to have freeman rights under Charlie was talking about, the Magna Carta. But then again, the king, he decided he was going to get arbitrary. He brought his admiralty courts, his military courts. And he says, no, you're going to be my property. And you're not going to be armed because it's too hard to control you when you're armed. So I'm coming to take your guns. Really? Force majeure. You're not taking my arms because then you're taking my property and you're taking my life. I'm going to shoot your ass. That's really what it all comes down to in the end. And that is where we're at today. Because they have completely dismissed any notion of us having any rights. I mean, shit. You look at the violations every day. This thing here in Portland, this is just commonplace. Hell, they're out there. You have the mayor of Portland up there on the TV talking about, oh, I think we should shut this down. You can't, you son of a bitch. You have no such authority. You beneath me. You're beneath the dirt on my feet, servant. You're not my master. You're my servant. You go and you do what I tell you. You get out of line, and I have to deal with you in the common law. Then if the common law is removed, I guess we're to the second article, and I have to deal with you with force because I have a right to preserve my own life, the most natural of natural rights. I mean, in the Declaration of Independence, the beginning of the hijacking, when they started enumerating, because they knew what they had done, what they had perpetrated, and what the people were pissed about, and they were intending on hijacking a popular uprising. The right to life, liberty, and property. That is an absolute right. And if there is no law in place to protect it, I got the right to protect it with my very life right up to my death. And again, here in Portland, they seem to, I mean, this is how far off the reservation these son of a bitches have gone. This is how far down the path to tyranny we are. We are at the point to where, I mean, if they arbitrarily decide to go at any one of us, they don't, I mean, you people know it. I mean, the very thought that, in the first place, they could not regulate what goes into your body, but you think about it like this, if they want to get you, pull you off the side of the road, throw a gun in the floorboard, or a bag of dope, and you're going 40 years or death right there on the spot, but arbitrary. No law to protect you. I mean, if their law was there and the place to protect you, they wouldn't even be there. They couldn't exist because they have created this apparatus completely without authority to do so, just like the 14th Amendment.
Henry?
Yes, sir.
Do you, You know what kills me is when these cops pull you over, they look like your sons. They look like little kids that you just want to just grab and just put them over your knee
spank them.
Absolutely.
You're absolutely correct. But this is the people that gravitate to authority over others. I mean, if you're an American national, you have the ultimate authority. Hell, you're a sovereign. You can own property. I mean, you can execute your own life. You can prosecute your own life. You have the authority to enforce your rights. But people, I mean, they have opted for these little freaks out there. I mean, these guys here, what they want, I don't know. It's a sickness in them. It is a sickness. It's a mental illness. To want to be a controller over people, which was the whole idea of this country. Nobody was going to control us but us. And the only way one of us could be controlled by another was through the courts, and it would have to be for a grievance, for something we have done. A punishment is the only way you could lose any of your freedom, is for a punishment for violating somebody else's freedom.
But for weak people, it is very seductive.
Oh, boy, yeah, it will. It attracts, like I said, the weakest and the spineless and the cowardly among us. And you look at them out there, if those aren't a pack of cowards with guns, which is a very dangerous thing, I'll eat my hat. Anyways, guys, we've made it to the top of the hour. We will be back tomorrow at 12 Pacific, 3 Eastern, for another broadcast of The Word from the Trenches on PBFTT. And remember, and ultimately, you do have that ultimate right to defend your... And when the law breaks down, you have the right to do what you have to do to survive. And that is The Word from the Trenches.